You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Dean Kinetter.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Earlier this week, Governor Tony Evers announced a clean energy plan for Wisconsin.
It lays out a list of strategies for achieving goals that will help Wisconsin adapt to and mitigate the effects of climate change.
That includes the target of 100% carbon-free electricity by 2050. Among the other goals, reducing the state's purchases of energy from other states by developing more in-state sources for power and increasing the use of renewable sources. That plan sets goals, but to put many of them into practice, the state legislature would need to sign off on changes.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What is your top priority for energy in Wisconsin? Where should the state be focusing when it comes to energy policy? What should we change, and when should we change it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org.
Fred Beach teaches energy technology policy and international energy policy at the University of Texas, Austin. Fred, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
A lot of states, Fred, have plans of one sort or another to promote renewable energy, to manage their energy grids and more. First of all, can you talk about the role of a state government in setting these kind of priorities for the short and long term?
Actually, in the United States, they're pretty limited. We live in a representative democracy. So most of the voting we do is not so much with the ballot box to get our representatives in there, but it's what we do with our wallet, our pocketbook. Our strongest votes are our actions within the marketplace. So the government can set goals, and the legislature can pass laws that restrict things or encourage things. But it really comes down to what I think the consumer does that matters the most.
Well, if consumers are listening, and I assume most of us consume energy one way or another, what kind of influence can they have as consumers on the energy mix in their community?
I guess by speaking up with their actions. Many of us have the opportunities, depending on our electric provider, to get lower emission energy sources or purchase those. Most of us who have single family homes obviously have the option to put solar panels on our roof or to control the type of heating and cooling we do in our homes, which is influenced by the energy source. And then, of course, there's transportation, which is a whole other sector we can influence.
There is as a fair amount a state can do when it comes to regulations to make it easier or more difficult to do things like, you know, encourage wind or the rooftop solar you just mentioned. What kind of examples would you point toward in states that you think are doing these things well or poorly?
I think one of the strongest things a state can do, and a few states have done, is deregulate their electricity market. Obviously, California did that quite some time ago and went through a lot of learning pains in the process. Texas followed a few years after that, learned from California's mistakes, and other regions have followed. Deregulating the market, giving the market more power, and therefore the consumers more power, I think is a strong step in that direction. I think that is something certainly that the state could do if they chose to, but it'd be a pretty bold move.
You wrote a few years back about Texas's growth in renewable energy sources. Can you talk about the kind of things you've seen there and what you think has helped that happen?
You know, Texas is interesting. We're a very strongly Republican state these days, even though we used to be Democratic. Wind has just been phenomenal in Texas, the way it has grown, and it's had very little to do with the government. Wind reached a point where it was extremely competitive economically, and it took off. In Texas, if it makes economic sense, it happens.
We're talking to Fred Beach from the University of Texas, Austin, looking at renewable energy plans by state governments. As he says, they, of course, don't have full control over such things. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you done rooftop solar at your place here in Wisconsin or in a neighboring state? What kind of regulations, what kind of rules did you encounter? What kind of changes do you want to see when it comes to the state's energy policies? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Okay, here in Wisconsin, Fred, we have this this plan, this guideline from Governor Evers. A lot of the practical steps would have to be, you know, involve the legislature probably. As you look at what you're seeing from the governor's office here, what do you make of it?
It's 170 pages that doesn't say much.
How so?
Just some aspirational goals and objectives, but very little on how things are going to evolve. I mean, Wisconsin's in a very difficult position. You have very little wind resource. You have very little solar resource. You're heavily dependent on coal and natural gas in the electricity sector. And I see nothing in that 170 pages speaking to how that's going to change or how it should change, other than it should change.
Well, with wind, for example, we've got neighbors like Iowa, according to the Department of Energy, getting a big chunk of their energy, their electricity, I should say, from wind, over 50%. Wisconsin's not that different than Iowa. Why do you see potential at least for growth in a state like Wisconsin?
Absolutely. I mean, Wisconsin does not have the equivalent wind resource of Iowa, but you do have Lake Michigan, which has excellent wind resource just a few miles offshore. Honestly, I am a little surprised personally that the Wisconsin has not taken greater advantage of the wind resource of the lake and built some significant offshore wind out there. That may have somewhat to do with the fact that, again, you don't have a deregulated market. A couple of very large power providers determine somewhat independently what they offer.
Do you think the state should play a role in saying, yeah, we want to wean ourselves off of coal in particular and then natural gas to fill in the blank with whatever works in the state? Do you see a significant role for the state in charting that course?
I think the best thing the state can do is set standards. And throughout that 170 pages, the plan, the standards I see that the state is aspiring to is low carbon, low emissions. If you want to influence people's behavior, one way to influence their behavior is place a tax on those high fossil fuel, high carbon sources of energy. Give people an incentive to do something different. That's kind of like that's a stick, not a carrot, but sticks often tend to work better than carrots.
Do you see carrots that might be tasty enough to work?
You know, the best carrot out there to encourage people, if you want to see more rooftop solar, is do a decent net metering plan for people who do it. But there's been huge pushback against that, not only in your state, but in many others around the country, primarily driven by the utilities.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Mac is with us in Milwaukee. Mac, hi.
Hi. I think it's valuable to push back on the narrative that consumer choice is the driving or even only factor in fighting these things. To a huge extent, when we leave everything up to the market, that's essentially allowing the market and the large companies to control it to dictate our actions, like using the example of transportation. If I'd like to get somewhere in America, if I'd like to have a job, I need to drive a car because there is no government public alternative. I need to buy a car from a private company, put gas in it, and drive somewhere. Like, we subsidize the gas companies and clear out a market for them, and that's how capitalism historically has worked. I think we need strong government regulation and intervention to get these things done.
Mac,
would be my comment.
Mac, thanks for the call. Fred, what do you think?
I agree with the regulation part. Place a carbon tax. Tax gasoline more heavily. If you want to get to work, as you mentioned, in a car, which is hard to do without a car, buy an electric car. And it would be much, it's already economically to your advantage to do so. And yet we see very low penetration so far in the United States.
Thanks for that call, Mac. Governor Evers' plan also involves hoping for more use of electric vehicles in Wisconsin, both by the government and by individual consumers, maybe like Mac. Do you see a policy device, if that is the goal, to help make that happen?
I don't think a policy device is necessary at this point. Electric cars are actually a better economic choice than fossil fuel vehicles at this point. And in fact, even if, you know, we could wave a magic wand and all folks in your state were driving electric cars tomorrow, it would make your situation even worse because the vast majority of your electricity comes from natural gas and coal.
We're talking to Fred Beach about clean energy plans for states. Governor Tony Evers announced Wisconsin's first one of its kind this week. Fred teaches energy, technology, and policy at the University of Texas, Austin. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see more renewable energies like wind and solar in Wisconsin? If so, how do you think we should get there? Should we have more nuclear in the mix? Just one active plant right now? Do you want to see wind turbines in your community? What questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Dean Knetter.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Fred Beach. He teaches energy, technology, and policy at the University of Texas, Austin. We're talking about Wisconsin and other states' clean energy plans, detailed and precise, or vague and aspirational. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What would you like to see Wisconsin pursue when it comes to energy policy over the next couple few decades? Are you doing rooftop solar? How does that work out financially for you? Are there things that might make it easier or more difficult for you to make that decision? How about nuclear power? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Fred, we've had conversations on this show in recent months about nuclear power. The case being made that it's a little different these days. You could do smaller plants, more economical plants. Do you see room for that in a renewable energy mix?
I think it's essential, and not so much a renewable energy mix. I mean, what we all really want, I believe, is clean energy, low emission or zero emissions energy. And that is precisely what nuclear is. So, yes, I mean, I'm biased. I'm pro-nuclear. I've served on nuclear-powered submarines and aircraft carriers in the Navy. I'm very familiar and comfortable with the technology. But yes, I think it's an essential part of the energy mix as we try to incorporate more wind and more solar sources.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Rick is with us in Madison. Rick, hi.
Hi. I'm curious. I'm seeing recently that we're building some pretty big solar farms, and we've seen some fairly big wind farms down in especially in Illinois. Why not combine? Why not put windmills on top of solar farms?
Rick, thanks for that call. I imagine it involves where the wind and sun are. Fred, is that something people are doing?
It's very dangerous to do that. We've seen very many cases in the wintertime. You get ice on the blades of wind turbines. And as the blades thaw and that ice comes off, it comes off in a projectile manner. The last thing you want is a large array of solar panels in close proximity to those wind turbines.
That makes sense. Rick, thanks for calling in with the question at 800-642-1234. The governor's plan here also mentions manure digesters. That's something we have some of in Wisconsin. I think there's a bit of that in Texas, too. Do you see this being a significant potential source of electrical generation?
Not a huge source, but an essential part, because anaerobic digesters not only eliminate the methane that would have come from that source and gone into the atmosphere, but use that methane then as a fuel source. So in effect, it's a net zero carbon type way to take what had been a pollutant, the methane, and use it as a fuel source. So no, I think it's a very encouraging thing to see employed at larger scale. It certainly works towards distributed energy solutions.
Let's take another caller now. Matthew is with us in McFarland. Matthew, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call and discussing this very, very important topic. I'm a building science expert, and I'm wondering if the guests can comment on the need for electrification of the building stocks. You know, buildings consume around 40%, and the need to educate future generations of the importance of electrifying buildings and many other things that we use.
And Matthew, just to be clear, you're talking about using electricity instead of, say, natural gas for heat and cooking?
For heating, yes, absolutely. Instead of natural gas for the heating, which is predominantly up in northern climates, which we need to do, but there are alternatives.
Matthew, thanks for the call. Fred, is that part of the picture?
Absolutely. I mean, people think we're highly electrified in this country. Our electrification has only just begun. You're absolutely right. You live in a very cold climate. The majority of your residential, commercial, industrial heating is via natural gas, which is a very efficient way to heat, but it is not very climate conducive. Heating with electricity is possible through advanced heat pumps. It is much cleaner, but again, it depends on where your electricity is coming from. again, if I could wave a magic wand tomorrow and everybody in your state had electric heat pumps for heating their homes, it would be a worse situation because that electricity is coming from coal and natural gas power plants. You would have just made the situation worse. So everything has to work together as we talk about these areas where we can improve. They have to be synergistic with what we're doing in the other areas of the energy economy.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about clean energy and how to get there with Fred Beach from the University of Texas, Austin. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. We've got Linda with us in Appleton now. Linda, hi.
Hi there. Yes, I know there's lots of different types of electrical cars coming out, and I'm wondering if there's a way to have like a universal public, you know, plug-in for all the different types of electrical cars. I think that's about it. Thank you.
Linda, thanks.
Every electric car I know of can plug in to standard 115-volt household power. I've owned an electric car for 15 years. I've got nothing fancy in my garage. I just plug it into the standard 115-volt outlet. So there is a standard. It's called the U.S. Electric Grid. What I think you're referring to are some of the other high power charging options. And yes, there are basically two standards that exist right now, Tesla and not Tesla. But there are adapters that can make those work in either option.
Thanks for that call, Linda. Another question ongoing here in Wisconsin and around the country is, okay, yeah, you could plug in at home. How about on the road? Range, anxiety, that sort of thing. Are you seeing that problem getting solved?
I don't see range anxiety as being a problem. I have yet to meet somebody who actually owns and operates an electric car who has range anxiety. 90% of American miles traveled are commuting, and we 90% of those miles are trips of 30 miles or less. So the whole concept of, oh, but I wanted to be able to travel coast to coast, that is such a niche, marginal area of the operation of most automobiles that it's pretty insignificant. So it just bothers me that we get so wrapped up over that concept, which really isn't a problem.
Thanks again for the call, Laura. We'll go to Laura now in Twin Lakes. Laura, hi.
Hi. My question, thank you for taking my call on Happy Earth Day. And my question or comment is if there is any research ongoing as to, when a vehicle moves, it generates wind. And there is the sun to create solar power. So I'm picturing a car with a solar panel and basically a generation of energy from the wind that the vehicle actually creates as it moves. Huh. And that can help recharge the vehicle, you know, kind of, you know what I'm saying?
I gotcha, Laura. I never really thought about that. I know some electric vehicles use, when you're braking, I think they generate electricity. Can we use that to the movement of the air or movement through the air and the tops of our cars for solar?
Interesting idea. Unfortunately, as a car moves through the atmosphere, the air, it's actually that resistance, that wind resistance, that air resistance we're fighting against. Mm-hmm. So a car doesn't actually generate on a net basis wind or movement of the air. It only displaces the air as it moves through it, and the air comes back together behind it. What you kind of portrayed actually would have been a perpetual motion machine, fundamentally. So, I mean,
yeah, why don't
it's
we do
an
those?
Interesting idea.
No, just kidding.
Yeah, that'd be nice too. But certainly, I see more and more applications of actually putting solar on the roofs and hoods of cars. And even though it seems insignificant, if your car is sitting in the sun in a parking lot for 8 hours while you're at work, that can add a significant amount of range to your car.
Thanks again for that call. Now, I know we talk a lot about wind and solar and nuclear. Are there energy sources or energy storage technologies on the horizon, Fred, that you're watching for that, you know, might not perpetually be 10 years away, but could actually be something we see sooner than that?
One that's ready today and that can be deployed at large scale nationwide is geothermal. It's old technology. We've been drilling holes in the Earth's crust in this country for hundreds of years. And there's a lot of hot water down there. So I think low temperature geothermal is a very promising source of electricity generation that could be employed quite rapidly across the U.S.
Let's go back to our callers. Jim is with us in River Falls. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my comments. So just a couple things. I have like 5 kW of photovoltaics that I added, and also, I've got a geothermal heat pump, so that's help tremendously as far as, you know, not using a lot of power. And I just wish the government would have more incentives and tax rebates for that. I think a lot of those programs have been cut out. So, I mean, that would help people with their budgets quite a bit too, if everybody could put those on their home. Or, you know, geothermal heat pumps are great as far as being very efficient.
Jim, thanks for the call. We just have a few moments left. Fred, Jim would like to see incentives for people to do what he's doing, geothermal heat pumps and some photovoltaic cells.
Again, that's a way for the government to encourage what we want with those kind of incentives. We've renewed the solar PV incentive a couple of times now, but it, like many incentives, it has a phase out to it unless Congress keeps renewing it. And I think in this case, Congress should.
Thanks for that call. Fred, just in our last few moments, if you had one message for, I don't know, a Midwestern governor who wants to have a cleaner energy profile in their state, what would it be?
Tax gasoline.
Straightforward. Fred, thanks again for joining us today.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Fred Beach, the professor who teaches energy, technology, and policy at the University of Texas, Austin. We talked to them today about Wisconsin's new clean energy plan, how it compares with what some other states have in the works, and you can keep sharing your thoughts, your comments, maybe your own experiences. You can email ideas@WPR.org, or you can always tweet us @CentralTimeWPR. Again, that's @CentralTimeWPR.